Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. There's nothing I love more than this class of rookie quarterbacks, except my children. But these six guys who are all first-rounders are going to be amazing. The one guy I was worried about that would need a lot of time is in New England. I thought Drake May, he was at North Carolina. He's a little raw, work on his footwork. We don't know if the arm will translate. Two preseason games, I'm all in. I was ready to see him go and play. But apparently, Maggie, that's not exactly what seems to be happening in Foxborough.
Listen, we're just getting used to Gerard Mayo as a head coach, so there's been a little flip-flopping going on, or not flip-flopping, maybe just some indirect messaging happening. We are very far from the Bill Belichick days of basically, like, I'll tell you when I want to tell you when anything's going on with the Patriots. So here's kind of the TikTok of it. Obviously, the last preseason game, Jacoby Brissett got hurt. So he hurts his shoulder, but after the game, Gerard Mayo said he could have come back in if it was a regular season game. Then it was a little bit back and forth about whether Drake May was actually number two on the depth chart. Like, if Jacoby Brissett was hurt and couldn't play week one, is Drake May playing? Is he the guy? Okay. Then we get to Monday morning, and Gerard Mayo's now saying that Drake May outplayed Jacoby Brissett. And Manny, I think we have a clip from Gerard Mayo on WEEI talking about this.
I will say is that this is a true competition. It wasn't fluff or anything like that. It's a true competition. And I would say at this current point, Drake has outplayed Jacoby. Now, in saying that, we have to take in the full body of work, going all the way back to the spring and the beginning of training camp, and we'll see where we end up.
I mean, spring and beginning of training camp, I don't know what that matters. If he's outplayed him and we're here on the doorstep of the season, I feel like that's actually what would matter the most. If I were a Patriots fan, that's what I'd be looking at. And I think what this screams to me, Pearl, is that Gerard Mayo as a first-year head coach is not making this decision on his own.
Why
and
that?
I think that if he wanted to start Drake May, I think they would have said, I want to start Drake May. Or, he said there's a lot of factors that go into it, and I think that is a little bit of coach speak of there's a few different opinions, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm just saying it's very different from Bill. There's going to be a few different opinions that weigh into this decision. Again, this is not a bad thing. It's just definitely a difference between the old regime and this one.
I'm not sure what Bill would do in this situation, because the reason is obvious. I mean, I'll tell you exactly why they're... I don't know what's actually going to happen, but why they'd be tempted. I mean, Jacoby Brissett, unfortunately for him, is going to be cannon fodder. They start the season at Cincinnati, whose defense seems pretty nasty. That pass rush is going to be killer. Then a little break at Seattle versus Seattle at home. Then at the Jets defense and at the Niners defense. Do you really want Drake May to start off his career with those first four games? I don't think so. Maggie, I was thinking about when I used to follow Case around and go to all his camps and stuff. He was at the Rams. Case Keenum, the veteran NFL quarterback. He was at the Rams, and he was starting. Jeff Fisher's last year in L.A., and he was starting, and I went over and watched Jared Goff, and I was like, oh, my God, the ball comes out of his hand. Like, honestly, it should be registered with the Defense Department. It's coming out like a missile. How is Case Keenum going to hold that guy off? But it had nothing to do with who was the better quarterback at the time. They really wanted to keep Goff off the field so he didn't get just annihilated in week one. It turned out he got annihilated in week nine, and they, I think, won like three games that year, whatever. But the point, there is a reason to hold Drake May back. That May, you're right, I agree with you. I think maybe the GM said do that, but I even think it was probably easy to convince Gerard Mayo to do that, but just look at the schedule. I even if Drake May did outperform him, there's a compelling reason not to play him. It sounds like you probably agree with that to some extent.
This is where I think the business side of football also comes in, because I wonder if you are part of the crafts or whatever, you just sat through a 4-win season with Belichick. Do you really want to throw Jacoby Brissett out there, or do you want to fully turn the page? Here's our shiny, exciting new toy. Because to be fair, Mac Jones, even though they drafted him in the first round, Mac Jones was like a high floor, low ceiling guy who was never had the tools of Drake May. Drake is exciting. He's got the huge arm. He plays with this like like, oh my gosh, this dude could be a problem. Whereas Mac Jones basically came into the league as a game manager, and now he's a backup. So I think this is where you get some other people with other competing agendas, maybe, even within the same organization, to say, hey, we got to get Drake May out there. You would make a great point, though, about the defenses they're going to face. And let's not sleep on that Seattle defense. I mean, they brought over Mike Macdonald. They were bad last year, but the whole reason they hired Mike Macdonald was to make sure that defense gets a lot better. So that could
well,
be
that's
a,
in
a
New
problem,
England.
Too.
I mean, if it's going to get to the point where Seattle is a problem for you, like, because they have Houston and Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter coming at them in week six. There's nothing good here. They got another game against the Jets. The whole first half is a nightmare for them, schedule-wise. Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of conflicting messages from you. You're saying that Gerard Mayo is not making this decision, but then that the owners might want to play Drake May.
Yeah.
But it seems like Mayo is saying, hey, Drake May is playing better, but someone here is telling me to play Brissett. So how do you imagine this is all working out?
I bet that if Gerard Mayo had his way, I bet he wants to start Brissett. And I think that the business side people want to start Drake May. And I think that's where the internal sort of tension is that I would imagine exists even to a slight degree in New England. Now, listen, they've built up so much good faith over the fan base and the organization winning all those Super Bowls. Maybe they feel like, all right, well, we're going to do whatever we want to do and everyone will trust us no matter what. But I imagine that's what the conflict is. And you and I have talked about this. I'm starting Drake May. Like, if it's fully my decision, if I'm the czar of the Patriots and I'm the final decision maker, I'm starting Drake May out there. I know the offensive line isn't amazing, but I think Drake May has shown that he actually can protect himself out there. And that's the only thing that I would be worried about. His confidence and all that stuff. You're going to be a bad team. Like, what are we talking about? The confidence. Like, as long as everyone knows, listen, the expectation is not playoffs this year. The expectation is not we're going to win 10 games. Go out there and learn. If you can protect yourself, I think that you can throw them out week one.
Then why, if Gerard Mayo wants to play Brissett, then why did he just go out there in front of the mic and say that he's getting outplayed by my rookie?
Because I think, well, we all have eyes, so I think maybe he just had to, you know, maybe say what is actually happening. But I also think he may be getting some pressure from the front office or from the ownership or whoever to say, listen, we really want to put the young, exciting guy in the stands. It's the only thing to watch this year with the Patriots. Like, if you're a Patriots fan, what is bringing your butt to the stadium besides Drake May?
Well, I totally understand what you're saying, but Gerard Mayo's having some confusing messaging.
No kidding. Because I think he's getting a lot of different voices in his ears. That's my whole point.
I think if he really wants to play Brissett, he shouldn't come out there and say the rookie's outperforming him. By the way, the rookie obviously had a lot of center quarterback exchange problems, and somebody is not organizing that offense. Maybe it's the offense. There were backups to his preseason. So we'll see. I really like Gerard Mayo. I listen to him in every interview. He just sounds like a great guy. I mean, I think that was his reputation as a player. This guy's going to be a coach. This is a hard spot, Maggie. I feel like, man, this might be the least desirable NFL head coaching position in the entire league.
Take it over for Belichick. I mean, it comes with a lot of pressure, no doubt. But, you know, I like Gerard Mayo too, but I think that he's had some bumps here. You know, he came out before the draft, so we're definitely taking a quarterback. And then they had entertained maybe trade offers from the Giants and other people to see whether they would even trade out of that pick. I think that was a little bit of a stumble. They got through it, obviously. And I think that you're right. The messaging is not clear. You know, it's either is Brissett the starter or is Drake May outplaying him? We got two totally different messages, and it wasn't even 24 hours. It was 12 hours later, and we're getting a flip-flop. So I think this is part of the growing pains of it, and luckily for the Patriots, no one's really expecting much this year except for the development of Drake May. And that should be Gerard Mayo's number one focus, because if we've learned this with other coaches, whether you're defensive side of the ball or not, once you draft a quarterback in the top 10, it is your only job now is develop this guy. And that has to be the focus, or else you're not going to be the coach for very long.
Yeah, and if he wants to develop him, keep him on the bench until week 8.
Is that what you think? I thought you said throw him out there and start him. I thought you were with me on this one.
No, I mean, honestly, I just pulled up the schedule again. At least week 5. At least let him get to the injury-plagued Miami Dolphins. I do not want to see him. Cincinnati at Cincinnati at New York Jets at Niners. Even if I'm Drake, if I'm Drake May's agent, I'm calling the Crafts right now and saying, "Hey, you know, Drake has this really bad ingrown toenail. Can we wait till week five? I'm faking an injury. Yeah, what's the point? This is an impossible situation. Unfortunately, Jacoby Brissett. By the way, we don't know that.
Are you sure he's going to make it?
Yeah. I don't know. But is Bailey Zappe still on the roster? Just bring out somebody else. I definitely get the logic of sitting him. I know what you're saying.
This is best laid plans, though, because Jacoby Brissett already has a shoulder. He could get hurt in the first quarter against the Bengals, and then Drake May is going in anyway.
Well, reminds me a little. Justin Herbert was not supposed to play. Then these medical staff, the Chargers, injured Tyrod Taylor with a shot. So maybe. And by the way, that's who Drake May reminds me of. Obviously, I think you're going to get a lot. I've heard other comps, but dude, he looks like Justin Herbert. Tall, cannon, can run. So it's exciting. So I actually, yes, I'm going to be on the record. I would sit him till week five when they are home against Miami. Why would you make a young quarterback go to the Jets and Niners, Maggie? Why would you do that? That's just cruel.
I mean, Jacoby Brissett might be in a body bag by then. I mean, I hate to say it. I know he signed up for this, but this is not going to be easy for him, and he's starting now with the shoulder injury. My bigger point here with the Patriots is, you mentioned it, we'll talk about it, you know, Belichick and moving on from him. It's just a lot more complicated when you had a guy like that who was running every facet of the organization and gave no information, stonewalled the media, didn't care whether he came off badly to ownership, like didn't feel beholden to anybody in the organization besides himself, maybe his assistant coaches. Yeah, and I think that now it's different. Jerod Mayo is now just kind of like any other coach who has to play the politics game a little bit more and is trying to figure out his way through this whole thing. And now people who wanted to have a say over the last 20 years but couldn't because Belichick would just give them the dead fish look, now everyone wants to get their opinion out, and he's got to take that into account. And so, you know, the Patriots used to have this sort of mystique and this sort of, you know, boogeyman aspect to them because of Belichick and Brady. And I just think that's now completely evaporated. They're just like every other team going through every other trial and tribulation of moving on from big players and big cornerstones of the organization. And to think they're going to pull this off seamlessly and pass the baton is, what are the odds of that? Very, very slim. Very slim.
Yeah, day by day.
Yeah, I mean, all that is nice, but the problem is Bill Belichick left no talent, and the receiving core is terrible. Honestly, the Patriots' new regime has gotten off to an amazing start because Drake May is exceeding expectations. Like, it's amazing. Everyone's talking about Caleb Williams being a no-brainer. He's looked amazing. Jaden Daniels is the biggest hit of the preseason. Turns out the number three pick should have been the number three pick. In fact, I wonder even if there's a redraft if people look at him at two. I mean, he's looked great, so I understand what you're saying. That all sounds good, but man, they are really in a good spot with Drake May. That was a little lucky to sit there at number three and get Drake May. So I'm not quite as down on the situation. I do think I agree with you, going to have some growing pains. I don't really care what he says in the mic because most of the coaches lie anyway. We'll see. This is going to be fun to watch. I'm dying to know. I was just Googling it out. I don't know who's starting week one. Is he's saying Brissett, then he's saying May. It's going to be really fun. But you know what? They're not going to win any of these games anyway. All right, coming up next, Maggie, we have a fun exercise, which I think we are going to have very, very different opinions. I can already tell we're just headed in totally different directions. From the second we talked about this on the pre-production meeting, I immediately knew. I'm like, Maggie and I are going to approach this NFL assignment in a completely different way. That's, I think, what makes our show great. So that's coming up next. You can pick sides. Maggie and Perloff Show. Back on Maggie and Perloff. Okay. We are going to do an interesting NFL experiment. I think we talk a lot about quarterbacks, Maggie, but you know, there are a bunch of other guys on the field, and I think it's about time we rank those suckers. What do you say?
I love it. Okay. So we're going to try to do the top five. Each of us have our own different top five most impactful non-quarterbacks for this upcoming NFL season.
Absolutely. Okay, so non-quarterbacks, and you say impactful, not necessarily the best, but the guys who are really going to make the difference at the end of the season. All right, so how are we going to do this? We're going to alternate? What do you say, Meg?
I think we do just our five, one five, and then the other five. And let's just put all our cards on the table.
Okay, I guarantee there's going to be a lot of differences. You think we're going to have similarities? I took a different approach to this, so I do not think we're going to have... We're going to have some of the same names, but definitely not all five. Why don't you go first?
Okay, I am happy to go first. I feel very confident in the top five most impactful non-quarterbacks heading into this NFL season. Number five, Perloff, you know him well. He's Cam Jurgens. He's the new center for the Philadelphia Eagles. If the Eagles want to get back on track, the tush push has got to be a part of the game plan. They did it with Jason Kelce for a couple years and Jalen Hurts. Cam Jurgens, number five, most impactful non-QBs.
He's the third most impactful, maybe fourth most impactful lineman on that team, but go ahead.
I didn't go with Lane Johnson. He's not part of the tush push. Okay, number four, bit of a homer pick by me, but I'm going to stand by it. James Cook, running back, Buffalo Bills. You guys see him in the closet here broadcasting today because unfortunately I got COVID. But if something were to happen to Josh Allen, if James Cook can actually step up and be that running back that a lot of people believe he could be, I think the Bills could actually steady the ship. And he's the only one who can do that. It's not any of the other wide receivers. So I thought about Jonathan Taylor there, but I ended up with the homer pick of James Cook. We're doing top five most impactful non-QBs going into this NFL season. Number three, an oldie but a goodie, it's Travis Kelce. You know, we can talk about the brilliance of Mahomes and this wide receiver by committee. If there's no Kelce, there's no Super Bowl. He is the security blanket to end all security blanket. He's a security blanket who's maybe the greatest tight end of all time. Kelce deserves to be on this list. The second most important non-quarterback heading into this season is Pittsburgh Steelers pass rusher T.J. Watt. The record of the Steelers without T.J. Watt, now 1-11, Pearl. This is just the facts tell the story. You don't have T.J. Watt on the field. You don't have a prayer. And then my number one most impactful non-quarterback for the NFL season, the guy who's currently holding out for your San Francisco 49ers, Trent Williams, number one, without a doubt. Pay this man. Get him back in the building. 49ers have so much pressure to win the Super Bowl. They can't do it without Trent Williams. I don't think they can win a game without Trent Williams. He's got to be out there. My top five list, Cam Jurgens, center for the Eagles, James Cook of the Buffalo Bills, Travis Kelce of the Kansas City Chiefs, T.J. Watt, and Trent Williams, number one.
Okay. That was weird. James Cook, come on, Maggie. He might not even be the most impactful cook. Let's see what happens with his brother. I mean, this is nuts. All right, but we do have some common threads, which annoy me. I thought oh, you started off with Cam Jurgens and James Cook. I'm like, okay, we're going to be way different here. Unfortunately, we do have some similarities. I'm not going to lie to you. Okay, my number five is actually Trent Williams.
Five?
Well, yeah, because I mean, look, Brock Purdy's looked terrible in the preseason, I think, because of Trent Williams not being there. But Debo is also super important to that team, too. They went on this mini losing streak. It seemed like they missed Debo just as much as Trent Williams. So I'm going number five. Okay. Number four, I have a Chief, but it's not Travis Kelce. It is Chris Jones, who is a reincarnation of Aaron Donald. Chiefs won with defense last year. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, Travis Kelce was awesome, but at a certain point, Travis Kelce has to decline. It's just science, Maggie. And Chris Jones has a couple more years. Nobody other than Donald gets that kind of pressure from a middle spot when he does line up in the middle. I mean, honestly, he is the defense. He's incredible. So he's my number four. Number three is a little guy, little Tasmanian devil who might line up on the end, might line up at linebacker in Dallas. I'm just putting Micah Parsons as number three. There's no science here. He is just he's the most amazing defensive player. You can work around him, but that means that it makes it easier for the rest of the Dallas defenders. I'm actually a little surprised. I thought you might have put Parsons on there. Okay, my number two is T.J. Watt. I had that 1-11 stat. I said 1-10 because I wasn't counting playoffs. But it is amazing. Without him there, the only reason I didn't have him number one is even when T.J. Watt's out there, I don't think the Steelers are a Super Bowl threat. So Is he really making that much of an impact? We're talking about the difference between possibly a wild card game and a divisional game. So I'm not going with that one. The one that I think we're going to disagree about the most. Where's Nick Bosa on your list? I mean, you saw the Super Bowl. Nick Bosa is a one-man defense. Everybody was, where's Bosa? Where's Bosa? When he was out, the Niners were terrible. When he got hurt early in the season, the entire season fell apart. He is the most important defensive player because this is tough. Because I also left Myles Garrett off this list. I wanted to put him on there. I think Bosa is just a slight cut above every other pass rusher in the league. And he takes so much attention. I don't know how many more years he could keep this up playing like this. I assume he's going to decline at a certain point. But, man, is he huge for the Niners. So I actually have two Niners on that list. Okay, so we obviously have TJ Watt and Trent Williams to comment. Who are some of your near misses? I'm curious, Maggie, because I had a couple.
Yeah, so we'll tweet out our lists at Maggie and Pearl on X. We can put them out on social so you guys can take a look at who are both top five most impactful non-QBs going into this season. My also receiving votes that did not make it in, Kenneth Walker of the Seattle Seahawks, I thought he's going to be a big deal. I think
Maggie,
that if...
Yes. Why do you think running backs get paid $4 million a year?
And
they're generic.
What do teams rely on most at the end of the season when you're trying to make a playoff push when the weather's bad? It's all about the running backs. And then I had Jonathan Taylor because I still don't know about Anthony Richardson. And I think there's a world where Jonathan Taylor could actually carry the Colts. So I had two other running backs from my also receiving votes.
I can't. Don't tweet that out. What are you talking about, Maggie? It's 2024. How could you have running backs? I mean, Kenneth Walker might be the second best running back on his own team. What are we doing here? I can't believe you're going running back because you were with me. Don't pay running backs. Don't draft running backs. I've heard you say it. You know the drill. You know how modern football works. And then you're putting Kenneth Walker the fourth on this list?
Yeah, I am. I mean, listen, I'm not taking any of these guys number one overall in the draft. That's a very different topic. You're asking me who could carry a team and who could a team lean on and rely on, especially we're talking about impact here. So we're talking about teams, I think, that we expect a little something from, you know?
Here's the thing, though. Running games are determined by play calling and the offensive line. If the offensive line has a giant hole, there are 40 guys who can run through that hole. That's why you can bring out any rookie into the NFL and he can be good immediately. And also, if the defense is way back because they're worried about the passing game, that means the running back's going to get 6 yards. It's not the running back. It's everything around him. It's
well,
the ultimate system position. That's why they're the least impactful.
I have two offensive linemen also on my list.
Where are the pass rushers? How could you not put Micah Parsons on there?
I put TJ Watt. Here's the thing about Micah Parsons. He is awesome. He and Bosa are both great. And Myles Garrett is the reigning defensive player of the year. I get it. My whole thing about Micah Parsons, though, and I love him, and I think he's great. If you have a two touchdown lead on the Cowboys, he's out of the game.
Oh, I'm sorry. And James Cook's going to bring you back from a two touchdown deficit?
I mean, maybe. I was saying if Josh Allen is something happens to him. You know, if it's Mitchell Trubisky who has to walk in, then James Cook becomes the most important person on the offense. And it's not even close. And so to me, that is why I went with the list I did. We're going to tweet them out, as we said. So you guys can go agree and disagree. And let's get into it.
By the way, I had Sauce Gardner a little bit because a shutdown cornerback means that you could put one guy and shut down a really good receiver and you can use the other personnel, kind of like Darrell Revis with the Jets. He's obviously a great player. And Penny Sewell, because I think I'm not an expert in offensive line play, but it does seem to be this narrative that Penny Sewell might be the best tackle in football for what he does. We'll see. And I know they paid him. This is fun list. Sorry, I didn't mean to get overly emotional, but you're putting running backs on here. And trust me, I want to draft Ken Walker the fourth on my team, but Charbonnet is pretty darn good too. It's funny to me. Were there any other Bills you considered? Is there a defensive guy? An injured guy, maybe Matt Milano.
Matt Milano, the impact's already gone away.
Von Miller, I noticed you didn't mention Von Miller.
No, I'm not expecting much from him.
That's fun, though.
You had no Eagles on your list.
No, because the Eagles are kind of spread. Like, it's not even easy to pick the Eagles guy. Obviously, Lane Johnson, without him, they struggle. Jordan Mailata is a great left tackle. A.J. Brown seems to be the heart and soul of the team. And here's the issue, Maggie. Who's the defensive player on the Eagles? I don't know, which makes me nervous. I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to pick them to win the division for that very reason we just talked about.
There you go. All right. The most impactful non-quarterbacks heading into the season is Bogosz standing by?
Yeah. Andrew Bogosz headlines.
What, me already?
Yeah. Who won that list?
Where's Raul Allegre or Scott Norwood? No more former pickers to talk to?
Bogosz, who won that list there? What do you think?
Oh.
It's got to be a winner and there's got to be a loser. That's how this works.
She can't see me, right?
Aww. Trent Williams, number one, guys. Number one.
Trent Williams is 100 years old. I had him five. So
you lost me on James Cook.
James Cook, right? Well, but we can, I mean, look, she's in her man cave here in New Jersey. Sorry for calling America. Yep. And all of a sudden, every day of this week, more Bills merch is arriving in the Gray household. What is going on there? Like, it started out with, there was maybe a little Buffalo thing. Now I feel like I'm in Orchard Park.
No, I got my, I also have my rally pimp shirt also here as part of the locker room sort of theme that I'm going with.
Yeah, that's a trend that lasted about 3.5 minutes. All right, Bogosz, do headlines so we don't have to argue about running backs.
I have noticed it feels like one of those games where it's like you have the pictures side by side and you need to circle the things that are different. Because I was going to ask.
Oh, I love that game.
I was going to ask last hour. There was one solitary thing in the cube over Maggie's right shoulder, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and now it's gone, which makes me think that it was like an embarrassing thing. And Bogosz. Maggie realized it and put it away.
You are freaking CSI.
I know.
I'll tell you what it is. Hold on one sec. Okay. It did look embarrassing. It's actually the wheels that like go on the bottom of this thing.
Okay.
And I just thought it looked kind of odd. So I took them out. Bogosz, what? Are you like a New York City detective in a former life? Do you do this to your family too? It's like, hey, did somebody move that vase 6 inches? Like what? So observant. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, but honestly, it's because the way I'm looking at you right now, I only see half of your screen because of my computer. So right dead center of my field of vision was that thing in the cube. So I couldn't not see it. And it looked to me like one of those like
what did you think it was?
It looked like a massager, like back scratcher kind of thing. The thing that's like it's got like two or three balls on it. You like roll around like a muscle thing. So, but that makes sense because it's wheels for the shell.
Yes. Did you just say? Did you think I had some kind of like weird toy in there or something? That was this is
yes.
For wheels.
Don't look at me, please. Yeah. Some kind of massaging thing. Let's pour one out for Jarrett Stidham this morning.
One of
the losers in the Broncos QB competition.
Obviously, I was very disappointed. You know, I know I'm a starting quarterback in this league. I have zero doubts about that. And, you know, it just didn't shake out my way. But I know what kind of player I am, kind of person I am. And like I said earlier, I'll be ready to go if I need to be. And like I said, I have no doubts that I'm a starting caliber quarterback in this league.
Except now at least two teams don't share that thought that he's a starting caliber quarterback. Or
yeah,
about three.
What, you know, I think that's a better thing to say than to come out and say, you know what, I belong on the bench.
Like they got this one right.
I think Jared kind of nailed that answer. In print, that might look sort of petty, but yeah, I'd be like, you know, I understand he's going with Bo Nix, and he should. Bo Nix is better. Honestly, any coach who plays me is out of their mind. Is that what you want, Bogosz?
No. It's basically what Zach Wilson said, by the way.
By the way, Zach Wilson is the renaissance of the NFL right now. It's crazy how good that guy looked. But I think, isn't that your job as a quarterback to say, I should have started? I know it's a fine line because you don't want to rip the current starter. I think he handled that okay. Anyone?
I didn't like it. Because to me, the only thing is if you were going out there and you were lighting it up, you were throwing two or three touchdowns, if you made it look almost without a doubt that you should have been the starter, that's one thing to say that come here and say, hey, like I think I got a raw deal, I should be starting. I mean, this guy was very forgettable in these preseason games. To sit there and stay with your chest, oh, I'm a starting quarterback and I'm very disappointed. It's like he got beat up by a rookie, dog. Like, come on, like, give me a break.
Jarrett Stidham played fine, weird. By the way. He had like seven drives and he got like 100 first downs. I don't know what you're doing.
How many touchdowns he scored, bro?
It's preseason, dude. I mean, what are you talking about?
He got outplayed by a rookie.
What are you talking about?
Pearl, he got outplayed by a rookie. You're telling me that you're okay with him saying I'm a starting quarterback when you know he got outplayed by Bo Nix?
Why on earth are you mad? Oh my God.
I'm mad about this because he's talking like it was some injustice. Like it was like somehow like, oh, how dare they pick this guy ahead of me when he was, first of all, he's been a journeyman in the NFL. He did not play great this preseason, the last preseason game. Everyone's like, wow, man, Bo Nix, he really salted that one away. You're supposed to be the veteran. Yeah, I don't want to hear about this.
EJ, you heard things that he didn't say. I mean, he didn't rip anybody else. He said, I'm disappointed. I think I'm a starter. Like Perloff said,
he said, I know I'm a starting quarterback in this league.
Yeah, but like Perloff said, that's what he's supposed to say. He can't go, yeah, I suck. Why am I even on the roster in the first place? Like, I can tell you right now, like, here's my insanity. Like, I think if you drop me into a broadcast booth of Game 7 of the World Series, the Super Bowl, I do a really good job. Fox, CBS, ESPN, yeah. ABC,
Turner, they all disagree.
But I don't think that, and I should think that.
No, but you know what difference is, Bogus? You didn't go out there and they say, hey, Bogus, why don't you do the ALCS? Let's see how you do. And then you do an okay job. They give someone else the NLCS, who's a rookie. They do a great job. And then you sit there and you don't get the job and say, hey, you know what? I know I'm a World Series announcer. You wouldn't say that because you would look at your own performance and say, you know what? Like, I didn't do enough. You may not go out there and say, oh, I think I'm a scrub, but you would probably say, hey, like, I'm just going to work harder. Like, I know what I want, and I'm just going to get after it. To
sit there and say, I'm for Cam Thomas.
I think the moral of the story here is that every play-by-play broadcaster for every sport should check the brakes on their car before they get in, because it looks like Bogus could be on some kind of sabotage mission. And we know you have the skills. You know, the observation
took you too
skills.
Long to find that word, Maggie.
Sorry, the observation. Clearly, I'm not doing Monday Night Football. The observation skills to somehow pull this off.
By the way, I think Bogus, you forgot there's several new emerging sort of social media and computer companies that also rejected you.
It's That's not true. Just Amazon Prime.
Yes.
All levels of CBS broadcasting.
I think MLB just sold to to a new startup. I mean, there's about 400 different channels airing MLBs. They're so greedy they don't care that nobody knows where their games
Even
are.
Even the bankrupt ones won't talk to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you checked with the Saudis?
So wait, Amazon, did Amazon just pull out of base? I can't even keep track of that idiotic story with Bally Sports. Amazon just pulled out yesterday, right?
Yeah, they decided to not give money to keep Bally Sports alive.
And actually, it was funny when Bezos said it was, and I want to make one thing clear, Andrew Bogus will not work in my...
No matter who owns this.
Yes.
They beamed him in from outer space or wherever he is, just to say.
I was the deal breaker. Turner wanted to use me on NBA games, but Amazon didn't, so that's why the NBA picked them.
Okay. By the way, this whole, like, I can't believe we just had that much energy talking about a Jared Stidham conversation. Like, I like Jared Stidham. I think he's cool, but no one on earth cares if he starts or doesn't start, which is actually underscores your point, EJ, that, like, this was such a no-brainer that Bo Nix is 27 years old and looked amazing. Like, it's nothing against Jared. Jared Stidham could have played well, and I think it wouldn't have mattered because Bo Nix looked so ready to go.
In fact, he would have came out and said, hey, I was at disadvantage because the guy was older than me. Maybe then I would have had a little more respect for him, you know? Like, maybe he should have talked about Bo Nix's age.
Caitlin Clark had 19 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists last night in the Fever's 84-79 win in front of 17,608 fans in Atlanta. But things could have been much different with Clark rolling her left ankle in the first quarter.
I look really soft. It wasn't that... wasn't that bad of a turn, but it hurt. So sometimes you just need a second to to give yourself a second. If you ever sprained your ankle, it just kind of stings for a little bit. So I was good. They're like, you want to go in the back? I'm like, no, please, just tape right here. Let's go. We got to keep going. Get on with the game.
Indiana now has 14 wins, their most since 2016.
That's going to hurt a little bit when she cools off. You know, have you guys ever had an injury like that in the moment? You're like, I'm okay. Then like 6 hours later, oh. It's the worst.
Also, you got a big game coming up on Friday with the, I think, the last regular season game between the Fever and Chicago Sky. So this could be, is this the last Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese matchup that we get? I believe is this Friday, right? Double check me on that, but big game coming up. I know the ticket sales is like, it's $200, I think, just to get in the door.
The Boston Red Sox lost twice yesterday to the Blue Jays, 4-1 and 7-3. That first game, a suspended game from late June. Boston's now 14-22 since the All-Star break, 5 games behind the Twins for the last wild card spot.
Are you going to do the funny fact about that game?
No, you can.
I need the details, but did some guy play on both teams in this game?
So Danny Jansen was the Blue Jays catcher 2 months ago. He was at the plate when the delay started. In between then and now, got traded to Boston. So yesterday the game resumed with the Blue Jays pinch hitting for him because he was the Red Sox catcher in the resumed game. First player ever to play for both teams in the same game.
Well, 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 how the turntables have.
But, guys, hasn't baseball been around since 1839 or something? You're telling me no guys ever switched teams back in the olden days?
But that's in the same game.
I don't know.
Guys have done it between games of a doubleheader, but it's never been done. It's almost impossible to be done in the same game.
I guess so.
Kevin Butler basically said that happened to Jim McMahon in the preseason, right? Wasn't that basically his story?
He said,
go over to the San Diego locker room.
Totally. I feel like Cap Anson or somebody like that.
Billy Keeler?
Billy LaJoy or somebody somebody who had a nickname that you didn't know if it was a name. Like back then. Like,
Slapstick Jones?
Yeah. The catchers didn't even have face masks on back then.
They were sharing gloves.
Yeah, they didn't even have gloves. They just caught with their bare hands and hit with a branch.
Last thing from me, guys. The U.S. Open began with a bang yesterday. Single day record crowd of 74,641 people. That included a night session record of 31,775. They all saw Novak Djokovic cruise through his opening match with Radu Albit. Americans Coco Gauff, Ben Shelton, Francis Tiafoe among the winners as well. But Sloane Stephens lost in three sets last night at Arthur Ashe Stadium. Today's schedule has both one seeds playing on that main court during the day. Iga Świątek, then Jannik Sinner, Carlos Alcaraz, and Jessica Pegula headline the night session.
Watching Sloane Stephens meltdown in that match last night was just heartbreaking. There's something about certain sports when an athlete just loses it, like golf. This happens with Rory McIlroy several times, but definitely with Sloane. I mean, you're up in that third set, and then all of a sudden you can't get a first serve in. She's spraying balls all over the place. It was painful to watch her lose that match. And then I thought the funny story about the nightcap with Novak Djokovic is, you know, taking on this guy, he's a challenger, he's 35 years old, you know, kind of this is the moment of his career. And Djokovic said this guy, Radu, actually had beaten both of his younger brothers who are also professional tennis players. So this was him avenging this for his family last night.
Maggie, you missed a deep dive too. Coco Gauff beat Varvara Gracheva.
Yeah.
Did you know that Varvara was a translation of Barbara? Did anyone know that? She's a Russian-born French player. I guess in Eastern Europe, Barbara is Varvara. So there you go. Did not know that, I'll bet.
Thank you, Pearl.
Wow. Bogus said it was Italian. Bogus said it was Italian.
No, you said it was Italian, but she plays
for... Italian, no, and I said, how could she be Italian name in France? And then it turns out she's from none of those places.
I said, I'm pretty sure that Varvara is just Barbara.
In Italian.
And you said she plays for France, and now you've thrown Russia in the mix as well.
But she's Russia. It turns out she was born in Russia. We found that out, but she plays for France.
Never been in Italy.
She lost.
Right. So we can move on from Varvara.
What happens when I'm not in the studio? How does this devolve?
Bogus and I just argue about everything.
Yesterday was a lot.
What was yesterday?
Well, yesterday you were begging for Aaron Judge support, and you got like three different Shohei Ohtani votes, so you almost left the building.
Oh, man.
Everywhere you turn, you got a Shohei fan.
Yes. This building, it's an odd place. The last week in August, it is a weird vibe out there, Maggie. Not having you here, like, this is definitely kind of strange.
I'm still shocked at the results of that poll question, which is, who's having the better season, the more impressive season, Aaron Judge or Shohei? Judge destroyed our poll, 74% to 26%. I was surprised it wasn't a little bit closer. And speaking of our Twitter feed, at Maggie and Pearl on X, we do have our most impactful non-quarterbacks ahead of the NFL season. Both of our top five lists are up, and I wonder if I'm going to get snowed again. I lost every single poll yesterday by a lot. Well, I might be on a downswing.
Be clear, was Aaron Judge in the poll? It wasn't like Curtis Granderson. It was against Shohei Ohtani. Aaron Judge. All right, we got to take a break.
Yep.
I think It's been a while, but we got to talk about Jerry Jones a little more. That's next, Maggie and Perloff Show. Back on Maggie and Perloff, you know that music. That means it's cowboy quickie time. Maggie, to be in this industry, you need to speak fluent Jerry Jones. And I think we have another example of why from yesterday.
Yeah, this was an interview given to Clarence Hill, who is a longtime Cowboys scribe. Jerry says there's no better person to be GM than him. And he says, I've done it all, so I have an inordinate amount of confidence that bleep, if anyone can figure out how to get this bleep done, I can figure out how to get it done. I've been there every which way from Sunday, and I've busted my bleep a bunch. There's nobody living that's out cutting and shooting that can give you a bunch of times they've busted their bleep. So, hell no, there's nobody that could bleeping come in here and do all the contracts and be a GM any better than I can. End quote. Jerry put an exclamation point on that he is the guy to be running the Cowboys from here on out.
Yeah.
I just don't think you get pats on the back for signing CeeDee Lamb and basically giving Lamb everything he wanted. I mean, unless he was hell-bent on topping Justin Jefferson, which I don't even think he was, he got pretty freaking close to Jefferson.
Yeah.
Got a $38 million signing bonus. He got $100 million guaranteed. I don't see how Jerry necessarily won this negotiation.
Well, I think the negotiation ended up exactly where everyone on Earth thought it was going to end up. The only downside was it got a little close to the season, so hopefully Lamb doesn't pull a hamstring. But I don't even really think Jerry's running this team. I'm being totally honest. Like, I think he has a role, but can you imagine him doing all this on his own? Because that deal actually did end up pretty much where it was supposed to end up. Are you sure Jerry did all the work? I just, like, I don't know. If you know any older people in your life who talk a big game who might not deliver, thinking my grandfather. But the Cowboys do make a lot of smart draft picks. So Deron Bland got hurt, the cornerback.
Yeah.
They apparently got a fifth-round cornerback named Kalen Carson, who is the star of camp, who looks like he's going to be an instant hit. Like, who is finding these guys? It can't be. You're telling me Jerry's driving around on his bus to college games and being like, oh, man, that Cooper Beebe, he's going to be really good. I think somebody else is shadow running this team.
Well, you're talking about draft picks or those kind of personnel signings.
Yeah,
Jerry's talking about the contracts. Like,
but
I do think
why do you
that
think it's Jerry on the contracts? You don't think there's a contract guy there?
No, there might be, but when he says the buck stops with me, I think he's the one who's deciding, all right, this is who's going to accept the deal? Or are we going to filibuster this thing? Or are we going to drag this out? I do think that Jerry is still the guy.
He says
he's telling you that.
Yes.
So
He told me he was going all in this offseason, Maggie. Just because he's telling me something doesn't mean it's necessarily true. And by the way, if Jerry Jones was this good of a GM to go 12-5 3 years in a row, that is kind of impressive. Honestly, I think it's Will McClay. If I had to guess, I'm just reading the tea leaves here. I think he's getting a lot of help. I just think he is full of bluster when he says, I'm the man. I'm the GM who did this. I just can't buy it.
That's your cowboy quickie for today. Listen, obviously, like, you're running a $10 billion business. You need other people. You got to delegate out. But I think that Jerry wants everyone coming back to him for the final say on everything. And he also went on to say how he throws his weight around in the exact same way amongst the other owners. And he'll go into these owners meetings and say, hey, I was around when there was no money. And we had to somehow get money. And I had to go back to Coca-Cola and all these places every month. And I'd ask them for millions of dollars. And these new owners don't have no idea what that's like. I think he really still believes he's the best guy for the job.
I don't know. If Jerry had the final word, then Johnny Manziel would have been their quarterback. All right, coming up, we're going to get into old school, new school. And I think, Maggie, I'm going to beat you in this bowl, too. Oh, I cannot wait. Old school, new school next. Maggie and Perloff Show.